This is Capricorn FM Podcast.
This grade 12 lesson is proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more providing quality education.
Greetings to all matriculants. The examination is just around the corner. So it is absolutely important as a learner to know the structure of accounting paper 1. And we will also look into the frequent asked questions. Now, the accounting question paper has been split into two papers, namely accounting paper 1 and accounting paper 2. Now, each paper will be out of 150 marks, and the duration for each paper is 2 hours. All questions are compulsory, and you don't have to choose. You have to write all the questions. Now, each question covers a main topic that will be outlined shortly. Remember, the pre-printed answer book will be provided, wherein all questions must be answered. And all the calculations, the workings, and the final answers must be done in this answer book. When you write an examination, please always work against time. Use the time allocated on the question paper to judge whether you will be able to complete all the questions in the available time. And time management in an examination is important to ensure that you complete the paper in the available time. Show all the calculations in brackets to earn the part marks. But today the focus is on accounting paper 1, and the content for accounting paper 1 will cover the following. Number 1, recordings, reporting, corporate governance, and interpretation of financial information. Now, learners will also be provided with a formula sheet, and this will allow learners to focus on the application of the formula. Now, the following are the main topics for accounting paper 1. The accounting paper 1 will cover the following. Number 1, accounting concepts. The GAAP, that is generally acceptable accounting principle, and international finance reporting standard. Remember, accounting concepts, among others, includes the income tax, the shareholders for dividends, and so on and so forth. The GAAP principles will include the historical cost principle, the prudence materiality principle, the business entity rule, the matching and going concern. It also covers the bookkeeping, accounting equation. In accounting equation, you need to show the effect on accounting equation. It also covers the adjustments, the final accounts, and the trial balance. Financial statements, which includes the notes to the fixed assets, the inventory notes, and independent auditor's report. Don't forget that there are 3 financial statements that we are going to be assessed on, which is the statement of comprehensive income, which is the income statement, the statement of financial position, which is the cash, the balance sheet, and lastly, the statement of financial position, the statement of the cash flow, which is the cash flow statement. You will also be assessed on the financial indicators for reporting purposes and the interpretation. Here we are referring to the ratio analysis and interpretation of financial indicators. Analysis and interpretation of financial statements, which is the ratio analysis. You will also be assessed on the corporate governance, the ethics, and professional bodies. Now, that is in short the topics that are going to be covered in accounting paper 1. Now, from here, there are certain questions that you will come across, especially the frequent asked questions. Now, when you are required to prepare the income statement as one of the financial statements, remember it is important to know the format used when you prepare the income statement. Now, from there, you will have the sales. At some point, you find that there are certain information that affect the sales. Now, when you do your calculations, remember, you need to check all the transactions, all additional information that affect the sales. Things like debtors allowances. If there is any debtors allowances, please don't forget to subtract the debtors allowances from the sales amount. Let me give you an example. Let me just give you an example. Now, if you are given the opening balance for the sales from the pre-adjustment trial balance, let's say, for instance, we having the sales amounting to 10,563,280. That is the opening balance for the sales. And from there, you're going to check if there is any other information that affect this particular transaction. Let's say, for instance, there's an information which says a credit invoice for 36,720 after a 10% trade discount issued on the 31st of March 2021 was not recorded. There was a credit invoice for 36,720 which was not recorded. And it goes further to say goods are marked up at 70% on the cost. Now, the opening balance for the sales from the pre-adjustment trial balance is 10,563,280. Now, we are going to add the credit sales, which was not recorded, which amount to 36,720. Since this amount was omitted, therefore, it's going to be added to the sales, which means from your income statement, you will record sales in brackets, the opening balance for the sales, which is 10,563,280. And then you add the credit sales, which was omitted, which is 36,720, and then it will give you a final figure for 10,600,000. That is the correct amount that you're supposed to record in the income statement. And then as we move on to cost of sales, let's say, for example, the opening balance for the cost of sales from the pre-adjustment trial balance is 6,236,000. And then from adjustment and additional information says a credit invoice for 36,720 was not recorded and the goods are marked at 70% on cost. Now, since this credit sales for 36,720 was not recorded, we also need to take the cost price of this credit sales, which was omitted. So we actually want to calculate the cost price of the goods purchased on credit, which was not recorded before a 10% discount. Now, your calculation is going to be as follows. We're going to take 36,720 multiplied by 100 over 90, because we want to know as to how much is the 10% discount. and then it will give you 40,800. Now, the 40,000 is the value of the credit sales before the 10% discount. And from there, we are going to take that 40,800. Now we want the markup. We want the cost of sales. We are going to take that 40,800. We multiply by 100 over 170 because we've been told that the markup on cost is 70%. So the 40,800 multiplied by 100 over 170, it will give you 24,000. So which means you will record cost of sales in bracket, the opening balance for the cost of sales, which is 6,236,000. And you also add the cost of sales for the goods that were omitted. The cost of sales for the goods that were omitted is 24,000. So this 24,000 is going to increase the cost of sales that we have. And the final figure would be 2,260,000. The opening balance is 6,236,000 plus the cost of sales for goods that were omitted, which is 24,000, and it will give you 2,260,000, and you record it accordingly. Now, moving on to the rent. The rent is regarded as a fixed cost, but the business can decide to increase the rent at any given time during the year. Now, for instance, if our business operates within the financial period, which is from the 1st of March 2020 to the 28th of February 2021, and rent gets increased by 500 rand commencing on the 1st of December 2020. We simply subtract the rent income balance from the trial balance by 500. Because we've been told that within the last 3 months, in December, the rent was increased by 500. So we're going to take the trial balance figure and subtract the 500. This 500, you're going to multiply it by 3, because if you count from December, January, and February, which means this 500 increment, it's included in the amount for the rent, which was increased on the 1st of December. So 500 multiplied by 3, it will give you something like 1,500. So the 3 months that I'm talking about here will represent the number of months with the increase, and we're going to subtract it from the balance, from the trial balance figure. So from there, we divide the amount that you get by 12 to get the rent before the increment or before the increase. Now, if there is any rent income received in advance, if there is any rent income received in advance, say for example, we have received the rent for March. Remember, the end of financial year is the 28th of February, but we have already received the rent for the 14th month. The rent which was received for March in advance, this will mean that 500 increase will be multiplied by 4 months. And from there, we are going to subtract it. We are going to subtract the rent amount from the pre-adjustment trial balance figure. Then we divide the amount calculated by 13 months due to the fact that the March balance that will be received in advance. Now, for if there is an increase, for an increase by a certain percentage, if you can come across a transaction wherein the rent was increased by a particular percentage, or having a month paid in advance, you will have to count the number of months without the increase and multiply them by, you multiply it by X, which will show you the original monthly payment. So it means we are going to solve this mathematically. Now, from there, you count the number of months with the increase, taking into account the months in advance and multiply by the months by X. And then it will be equals to the rent amount in the trial balance. So you will therefore get the original rent amount before the increment. So from there, then you multiply the amount calculated by the percentage to get the amount that the rent increased by. And lastly, add the percentage increase to the original rent amount as calculated. Let me just give you an example. Let's say the rent income includes the rent received for March 2015. And the rent income increased by 1,425 on the 1st of September 2014. And the financial year starts on the 1st of March 2014 to the 28th of February 2015. So if you count from the September 2014 to March 2015, it's a period of 7 months. And therefore, increase amount will be 1,425 multiplied by 7 months, which is 9,975. So the rent amount from the pre-adjustment trial balance of 374,950, we minus 9,975, and then it will give you 3,640,000. It's going to be 364,975 divided by 13, then it will give you something like 28,075, and from there you add that 1,475, and then it will give you 29,500. And therefore, the 29,500 is going to be the monthly rent, which exclude the increment. So the rent was received in advance and therefore must be subtracted from the pre-adjustment term balance. So that basically means 28,075 plus 1,425, it will give you 29,500. So this 29,500 has been paid in advance. So we are going to say the rent to the value of 374,950 less income received in advance to the value of 29,500, then the final figure to be recorded in the income statement will be 345,450. That is, in short, the rent income. Moving on to the trading stock deficit, remember, you need to check the fiscal stock taking on the last day of our accounting period. You check the stock on hand for the trading stock. If we had 1,890,000 as an example for the stock on hand, and then you check it against the fiscal stock taking. So the fiscal stock taking, let's say it's 1,890,000. And then we're going to subtract this amount from the pre-adjustment trial balance figure. So the pre-adjustment trial balance, let's say it's 1,910,000. That means that there is a trading stock deficit for 20,000. And however, to arrive at 20,000 is obvious. We are going to take the amount for the training stock at the beginning of the financial year, which is 1,910,000. We are going to subtract the amount for the training stock at the end, which is 1,890,000. And then it will give you 20,000. So this 20,000 is going to be the trading stock deficit. So the trading stock deficit is an expense. So you record it as such. Address questions on the income statement. How to answer questions based on the rent. How to answer questions based on the sales and the cost of sales. And then we also addressed questions on trading stock deficit. Now, as we move forward, when we prepare the income statement, you will also be asked to calculate the provision for bad debts. Let's say for instance, we have a debtor here called B Corsa. This debtor had an outstanding balance of 42,000. And this guy left the country and his account must be written off as irrecoverable. So remember, the debtors control account is an account for all the debtors. Mr. Corsa left the country while owing the business an amount of 42,000. And that means 42,000 is included in the debtors control account. And as such, we open the debtors control account. Now, on the debit side of our debtors control account, we debit the bad debts to the value of 42,000, which means we are going to say debtors control to the value of 792,000 less bad debts written off, which is 42,000, and then it will give us 720. And from there, the new balance for the debtors control is now 750,000. And from there, you check information that affect the provision for bad debts. If it says the provision for bad debts must be adjusted to 5% of outstanding debtors, you are going to take this new balance, which is 750,000, you multiply by 5 over 100, and it will give you something like 37,500. So we compare 37,500 with provision for bad debts from the pre-adjustment trial balance. Let's say from the pre-adjustment trial balance, the amount is 43,600. So the difference between 37,500 and the 43,600 would be 6,100. So the 6,100 is the provision for bad debts, which is an income. It's going to be recorded under income as provision for bad debts adjustment, amounting to 6,100. There you have it. Let's move on to the calculation of the interest expense. Normally, you will be given the loan statement. Let's say the balance we had 1,356,000 and the interest is not given. And then the repayment during the year is 300,000 and the balance at the end, let's say it's 1,200,000. Now, from the loan statement, the interest on loan is not given. So the balance at the end, which is 1,200,000, we add the repayment during the year, which is 300,000, and we less the balance at the beginning, which is 1,356,000. Therefore, the interest expense will be 144,000. 1,200,000 plus 300,000 minus 1,356,000, it will give you 144,000. So the 144,000, that would be your interest expense. So that is done. Let me just give you another example on the interest on loan. Let's say if the interest on loan is capitalized, remember a fixed monthly repayment, including the interest, let's say it's 25,400, and then was paid for the financial year. Now, if the interest on loan is capitalized, it means the interest is added to the loan amount. And we actually need to find out as to how much interest was capitalized. Let's say the loan amount was 1,430,200. And then we added the fixed monthly loan repayments, including the interest, which is 25,400 multiplied by 12. It will give you something like 304,800. So from there, we are going to less the loan amount for 2019. The loan amount for 2019, let's say it's 1,658,000. Therefore, the interest expense will be 77,000. So that would mean we take 1,430,200, we add 304,800, we minus 1,658,000, it will give you 77,000. I'm just highlighting some of the expected questions when you prepare the income statement. Let me give you the last question on the income statement, salaries and wages. Let's say we had a balance for salaries and wages, which is 1,280,000. And we are given information on employees, which says an employee was left out on the salaries journal for March. And the following details are applicable. The net salary is 9,100. And then the deduction by the employer is 30% of the gross salary. And the employer's contribution were 2,200. So one employee was omitted from the salaries journal and we are going to add it to the gross salary. So the question is, how much is the gross salary? We need to solve this mathematically. The net salary is 9,100. So we are going to say 9,100 equals to X minus in bracket X multiplied by 30%, which is going to be 9,100 equals to 7 divided by 10X. So X is equals to 13,000. So the gross salary is 13,000. So the deduction is 30% of the gross salary. Since that we have the gross salary, which is 13,000, we're going to multiply it by the 30%. So the 30% of 13,000, that is 13,000 multiplied by 30 over 100, it will give you 3,900. So the deductions, it's 3,900. So when you record it on the income statement, you write salaries and wages in brackets 1,280,000 plus this 3,900. You add it accordingly. So we are done with the income statement. Let's quickly move on to the balance sheet. You will be required to prepare the statement of financial position, which is the balance sheet. Now, in most instances, you will be required to prepare the fixed asset note. Remember, if the old asset is fully depreciated, please apply the 1 rand carrying value rule or the 1 rand carrying value method. Don't forget that when the asset is fully depreciated, we subtract 1. And then again, concerning the fixed asset, you will be given the incomplete fixed asset note where you will be required to calculate the missing amounts. And then, like, you need to know the framework, the structure of the fixed asset note. Remember, if you have 3 assets, which is the land and building, vehicle and equipment, you will have the cost at the beginning minus accumulated depreciation. It will give you the carrying value at the beginning. From there, you move on to the movements. Under the movements, you will have additions, you will have disposal, you will have depreciation. And from there, you will have the cost at the end minus accumulated depreciation at the end. It will give you the carrying value at the end. But the question is, you will be given the fixed asset note wherein some amounts are missing. Let's say from the fixed asset note, the amount for the land and building is not given. You need to check information to check if ever there is any land and building that was purchased during the year or the land and building that was sold during the year. Obviously, if we had the cost at the end, which is less than the cost at the beginning, it means the land has been purchased. For us to get the cost at the beginning, obviously we're going to take the cost at the end minus the disposal, if the land was disposed of or if part of the land has been sold, we subtract the disposal. Therefore, it will give us the cost of the land at the beginning. Now, moving on to the depreciation. Let's check the depreciation. Let's say concerning the depreciation, if the information says the depreciation for the new vehicle is calculated as follows. A new vehicle was bought on the 1st of January 2020 and vehicles are depreciated at 20% per annum on cost. The cost price of the new vehicle purchase is $625,000 and the vehicle was purchased on the 1st of January 2020 at 20% per annum on cost. And then the financial year ends on the 31st of March 2020. Your calculation will be 625. The 625 is the cost price of the vehicle which was purchased. We multiply by the rate of depreciation, which is 20%. And from there, you check the months. The month here happened to be 3 over 12. So we multiply by 3 over 12, it will give you 31,250. And then moving on to the old vehicle, you will be given the information. Let's say the value of the old equipment is 1,281,000. We multiply it by the rate of depreciation, which is 20%. It will give you something like 256,200. So the depreciation for the year, we're going to add all those depreciation for the old, for the new. And you also need to check for the depreciation for the asset that was disposed of. And then moving on to the disposal of equipment. Let's say if information says old equipment cost 21,000 was sold on the 31st of December. The accumulated depreciation, let's say, is 15,000. So equipment is depreciated at 15% per annum on the diminished balance method. So the cost price, we are going to say the cost price less accumulated depreciation multiplied by the rate of depreciation multiplied by time. So the cost price of equipment sold is 21,000 and the depreciation is 15,000 and the rate of depreciation is 15,000 and the equipment was sold on the 31st of September. So if you count from the 1st of October to March, it's a period of, remember the equipment was sold on the 31st of September 2019. Then that is the last day of the month. If you count from the 1st of October to March 2020, it's a period of 6 months. Therefore, we're going to say the cost, which is 21,000 minus accumulated depreciation, which is 15,000. We multiply by 20 over 100. We multiply by 6 over 12. It will give you 450. So, which step number two we're going to be to say 21,000 minus 15,000 plus 450. The 450 is for 6 months. So, which 15,000 plus 450 is going to be 15,450, which means the cost, which is 21,000 minus 15,450, it will give you 5,550. Now, from them, if you will be required to calculate the depreciation on equipment, therefore it's going to be accumulated depreciation on equipment at the beginning plus depreciation during the year less accumulated depreciation of equipment sold, which means we are going to have accumulated depreciation at the beginning, let's say is 200,000, and then depreciation during the year is 42,450, and accumulated depreciation for equipment sold is 15,450. Therefore, the final depreciation will be 200,000 plus 42,450 minus 15,450, it will give you the 227. I'm just giving you an example of the possible or expected question. Now, you will also be required to prepare the balance sheet, notes to the balance sheet, wherein you will be required to prepare ordinary share capital and the retained income. If you are required to prepare the ordinary share capital and then the retained income, you need to know, you need to calculate what we call the book value. When the shares are repurchased, we need to calculate the book value. Let me quickly just give you an example here based on the ordinary share capital note. Let's say we have information on the 1st of April 2019. We have 800 ordinary shares in issue, and on the 31st of March 2019, 400,000 ordinary shares were issued. And then on the 31st of March 2019, 60,000 ordinary shares were repurchased. And the average issue price is 7 rand. And the repurchase price is 10 rand 80. Now, from the information, we've been told that 800,000 shares were issued on the 1st of April. And 800,000 shares were actually sold at the beginning of the year. And the value of this 800,000 shares is given from information A, which is 4,800,000. So when you record it on your ordinary share capital note, the first column you record the number of shares that we had at the beginning, which is 800,000. And then the second column you record shares issued at the beginning. And then the value of those shares issued at the beginning is 4,800,000. And from there, you also need to add the number of shares issued during the year. Information says 400,000 shares were issued during the year. So the number of shares will be 400,000. And then the second column, you record shares issued during the year. And then the value of those shares is not given. So it's a question mark. So as I'm checking, it's like the issue price is not given, and as such, the value of shares issued during the year will be the balancing figure. So, but I will come back to that on a later stage. So as we move on the 1st of October 2019, 60,000 ordinary shares were repurchased at an average issue price of 7 rand, and the repurchase price is 10 rand 80. So according to this particular activity, there is no need for you to calculate the average issue price since it is given. So if the average issue price is not given, you actually have to take the value of the shares issued divided by the number of shares issued, and it will give you the average issue price. So the 60,000 shares were repurchased at an average price of 7 rand. Therefore, we're going to say 60,000 multiplied by 7, and then it will give you 420,000. So from your fixed asset note, you record 60,000 because 60,000 ordinary shares were repurchased, and you put the figure in bracket. And the second column, you record shares repurchased at 7 rand, and the value of those 7 is 420,000. Now, moving on to shares issued at the end, you simply add all those shares issued and subtract the shares repurchased. It will give you the total number of shares issued at the end. This one is simple, straightforward. We are done with this one. And then for retained income, if you will also be required to prepare the retained income, when you prepare the retained income, it is important to know the formula. You need to take into account the balance at the beginning for the retained income, and from there you add net profit after tax, and from there you minus the shares repurchased, and then from there you check the dividends, and then you check the interim dividends and the final dividends. The interim dividend plus the final, you add them together, it will give you the total dividend. Now, for you to get the balance at the end, you simply have to take the balance at the beginning plus the net profit after tax minus the shares repurchased minus the dividend, it will give you the balance at the end. And from there, you transfer it to the balance sheet. You just transfer this final figure to the balance, to the balance sheet. And then from there, let's quickly move on to the cash flow statement. Obviously, you will be required to prepare the cash flow statement. You may be required to prepare the cash flow statement in a statement format or in the format, in the form of a calculation. You might be required to calculate the income tax paid or the dividend paid or the loan repayment. Now, or you may be required to prepare a particular section of the cash flow statement. Let's say you may be required to prepare the cash flow from investing activities or financing activities. This one is straightforward. And then, but what is important here, you might be required to calculate the cash generated from operations. But we'll talk about that after the break. You will be welcome back. We are busy with the preparation of the notes or reconciliation between profit before tax and cash generated by operations. I said you will be required to calculate the cash generated from operations. Now, for you to calculate the cash generated from operations, you need to prepare what we call reconciliation between profit before tax and cash generated by operation. For you to do that, you need to take into account the profit before tax. You add depreciation, you add interest. It will give you profit before changes in working capital. From there, you check changes or increase or a decrease in inventory, increase or a decrease in debtors, and an increase or a decrease in creditors control. Therefore, it will give you cash generated from operations, and you transfer it to the cash flow statement. And then from there, moving on to analysis and interpretation of financial statements, you will be given questions on analysis and interpretation of the financial statements. Concerning the analysis and interpretation of financial statements, this refers to the ratios. You will be asked questions on liquidity ratios like asset test ratio, the current ratio, and so on and so forth. Now, you will be given the formula sheet wherein you just check your, you just do your calculation since the formula sheet is given. But let's say you are required to calculate the debt equity ratio. Remember, the formula used to calculate the debt equity ratio, it's going to be non-current liability is to shareholders' equity, or long-term liability is to shareholders' equity. Remember, it is acceptable when it is 0.5 is to 1. When it is 0.5 is to 1, it means the company is low geared. And then remember, this debt equity ratio, it must be compared against the interest rates. And you'll be required to comment on the debt equity ratio. Don't forget to show the trend or whether it has been improved or increased. And remember, you need to indicate as to by how much compared to the previous year. And you need to quote the relevant figures. And then moving on to earnings per share. Earnings per share shows how much profit the business made per share. And then the formula used to calculate the earnings per share is going to be net profit after tax divided by the number of shares issued multiplied by 100 over 1. That is the formula used to calculate the earnings per share. At some point, you'll be required to do the necessary comments on the earnings per share, and then you need to comment accordingly. And then moving on to dividend per share, the dividend per share shows how much profit per share was paid out to the shareholders. The dividend per share shows how much profit per share was paid out to the shareholders, and you will also be required to comment on the dividend per share, DPS. So don't forget to show the trend or whether it has improved or increased. And if it has improved or increased, it's important to show as to how much it has improved or increased compared to the previous year. How much was it last year and how much is it this year? And you also need to quote the figures. Remember, the company may decide to pay high dividends to shareholders in order to attract the potential investors. If the company want to attract the investors, if the company wants to issue more shares, what do? They just pay high dividend. They just want to pay high dividends in order to make the shareholders happy or to keep the shareholders in the company. But that is not always the case. At some point, the company may decide to retain something that can be used to expand the business. I think it is wise for a company to retain some of the profit that can be used in future. So that is the dividend per share. Now, the formula used to calculate the dividend per share, we are going to say dividend paid and declared divided by the number of shares issued at the end. The formula for the DPS is dividend paid and declared divided by the number of shares issued at the end of the year. So we are done with this one. I need you to listen very closely on this one, the dividend payout rate policy. The dividend payout rate or the dividend payout policy is not the same as the dividend per share. Now, the dividend payout rate policy, let me just say, you might be required to calculate the dividend payout rate or the dividend payout policy. Let's quickly take question paper, preparatory examination 2020, routing, question 3.1.2. It says, comment on the dividend policy for 2020 and provide a calculation to support your answer. Now, the formula used to calculate the dividend payout rate or the dividend payout policy, it's dividend per share divided by earnings per share multiplied by 100 over 1. The formula used to calculate the dividend payout rate policy is dividend per share divided by the earnings per share multiplied by 100 over 1. Now, let's say if the earnings per share is 77 cents, and the dividend per share is 40 cents. Therefore, the calculation will be as follows. When you calculate the dividend payout rate, you are going to say 40, which is the dividend per share, divided by the earnings per share, which is 77 cents. You multiply by 100 over 1. It will give you something like 51.95, which is the same as 52. So that would mean that the directors distributed 52% of the earnings for the dividends. And as such, they will retain out of 100, 100 minus 52%, you were left with 48%. So they will distribute 52% of the earnings for the dividends, and they will retain 48%. So out of 100%, they have distributed 52%, and they will retain 48%. And then lastly, let me comment on the net asset value. The formula used to calculate the net asset value is going to be shareholders equity divided by the number of shares multiplied by 100 over 1. You need to compare the net asset value against the market price. The market price should be higher than the net asset value, which basically means that the shares are overvalued, or the shares are highly valued, or the shares are in demand. So the market price should be higher than the net asset value. Now, moving on to the return on average shareholders equity, the formula used to calculate the return on average shareholders equity is going to be the net profit after tax over average shareholders equity multiplied by 100 over 1. So the average shareholders equity is equals to 1 over 2 into shareholders equity at the beginning plus the shareholders at the end. In other words, we add the shareholders equity at the beginning plus the shareholders equity at the end, or the shareholders equity for last year and the shareholders equity for this year, and then we divide it by 2, then it will give you the average. Average is the answer we get when we comment. When we divide. Now, when you comment, don't forget to show the trend, whether it has improved or increased. And if it has improved or increased, you need to indicate as to how much as compared to the previous year. Don't forget to quote the relevant figures. I think I've said the mouthful. The examination is just around the corner. You need to prepare yourself thoroughly. Try to practice as much question papers as you possibly can. Revise as much as you can. Make sure that you apply the necessary principles. Make sure that you are accurate in your calculations. Make sure that your interpretation of the adjustments and additional information is correct. And relax. Don't be nervous. Do your best, and God will do the rest. And let me take this opportunity to wish you all the best. And don't forget, we are proud of you. Make us proud. Make sure that you pass accounting and pass it very well with a distinction. It's easy. Accounting is an easy subject. You can do it. And thank you very much. And good luck, everybody.
This grade 12 lesson was proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more, providing quality education.
That was Capricorn FM Podcast.